So if you have a Chumash, which you should, Parshas Noach on page 30. So obviously, Parshas Bereishis ends with the Torah telling us Noach matza chen b'nei Hashem, the Noach finds favor in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You then find in the beginning of Noach this description about Noach. And so first it tells us, which we'll come back to in a second, that Noach was an ish tzaddik, tamayah b'dorosav, etzolakim hisalech Noach. We will talk a little bit about Noach in a minute, but it's good people are busy. What exactly is happened to the Jewish people? So the Torah, to the world, actually, the Torah tells us in Pasuk Yud Aleph, v'tishacheis ha'aretz afnei Elokim v'timalei ha'aretz chamas. Okay? This past Shabbos, when we were laying the word, somebody yelled out chamas. It's not the connotation of anything to do with each other. Chamas means a certain sense of robbery. Okay, so just for a minute, this is it. Rashi actually quotes that the entire situation of the Dor HaMabul was sealed because of chamas, of this kind of robbery, of stealing. The first question is, you have a generation that is only 10 generations removed from the creation of the world. Meaning, their great-grandparents knew what it was like to live in the beginning of the world. And yet, only 10 generations later, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wipes out the entire world and has to start again, almost the entire world. So Rabbi Chezkel Abramsky was one of the great heads of the London Beis Din, who wrote some beautiful svarim, says, you have to realize something. Chamas does not mean highway robbery. They were not stealing. It wasn't bank robberies. It wasn't thousands and millions of dollars. Chamas is very little. In fact, the Medra says less than a shava pruta. Less than, right? When you go to a wedding, and the chasan and the kala come up, and the rabbi asks, did you buy this with your own money? And usually the chasan should say he does. And if he says he doesn't, it's a very big issue. And then we have to figure that out under the chuppah. But assuming he does, we say, how much did you spend on it? It should be at least a pruta, whatever that is, a few dollars, right? 30, whatever exactly it is. It should be worth something. Why can a ring not be worth very fancy? Why can't you have a very, very fancy ring under the chuppah? Why not? Yeah, because then you think you're only marrying her because of the ring, right? So really, it's less than a shava pruta. So the Medra says that there are sheets over here if you want, and you can grab a chumash as well. That people would come, they would put a basket in the middle of a town, and everybody would come and take a little bit out at a time. Less than a dollar out at a time. So Bechezkel Abramsky says it was justified. They said, what am I doing wrong? I took a little bit, you took a little bit. You can't even accuse me of stealing. It's less than a shava pruta. You cannot take anybody to court for less than a shava pruta. So he explains, when a generation like that is justifying their actions, it doesn't work. Then you need an entire new world, which makes Noach so great. What is Noach's great quality? He's always doing the right thing. Noach was an ish tzaddik. What does it mean he was an ish tzaddik? An ish tzaddik, what does it mean to be a tzaddik? So Pasuk in Vayera says, it's not so tzaddik. What does it mean to be a tzaddik? So if you ask students to draw a tzaddik, there's usually a long beard, but he's a tzaddik. A tzaddik doesn't mean a long white beard. A tzaddik means to do the right thing, right? I hold by the letter of the law, by the spirit, I do the right thing. Noach was an ish tzaddik. In fact, Rabbi Soloveitchik says, if you look in the end of Ni'ilah is where you find the extra tefillahs, right? So we say Hashem Nu, and then you say Atanos Ni'ala Poshim, all the extra tefillahs just for Ni'ilah Shmona Esrei. In that Shmona Esrei, twice, we say Leman Nechdal Me Oshek Yadenu. Forgive us basically for stealing. That's it. The end of Ni'ilah, a whole day spent in davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The last thing that I ask God is that maybe I stole. So the first answer is, yeah, because we steal a lot and we don't even realize it, right? We steal this, we steal time, we steal knowledge, we steal a lot of things, right? We do things that we probably are stealing. I was just talking to my students about the four sections of Shulchan Aruch. So I said, Chosha Mishpat, we might not encounter so much, but we encounter it actually all the time. It's learned the least and has the most application. They're like, come on, we never deal with mum and shilas and monetary issues. We're not running businesses. So I then asked everybody to take out a sheet of paper. So one kid, of course, there's always the one kid, he never has a sheet of paper. So he says, can I borrow a sheet of paper? I said, hold on a second. What do you mean, can I borrow a sheet of paper? What does that mean? Yeah, it's bad. I want to use a sheet of paper. Are you going to give it back? I'm not going to give it back. I'm going to take it. Well, that's not borrowing. If I asked you to borrow your car and I never give it back, would you be upset with me? They go, of course you're going to give a car back. I said, well, that's DNA mominess, right? To do the right thing. So stealing, number one, we steal a lot. Fine. But says Rabbi Soloveitchik, "Manechta me'ushak yodenu," is because we all steal from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem gives us stuff in this world. We're supposed to impact the world and be better and learn Torah. And if I don't use my qualities for the right thing, then I'm essentially stealing from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Either way. So that's the beginning of the parasha. The world is filled with this chamas, with this robbery, with this justification of what was happening. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu therefore tells Noach, he has to build a teva. Why does he have to build a teva? Well, the answer you're going to give me is, he has to build a teva because?
He's
going to
use it to save.
And if the pasuk says, build a skateboard, what would the skateboard have been used for?
The same thing.
And if it says, build a Ziploc bag, you know what Hashem would have done? He would have seen everybody in a Ziploc bag. Why does it have to be a teva? And a teva was massive. It was massive. Why? Says Rabbeinu Bachya, because if you cannot rely on miracles. You have to show that you can do things, that you are involved, that you are, you know, doing something, and then Hashem will take care of the rest. But for me to say, God says He'll save us, I'll wait back. I'll sit here, and I'll relax. So it doesn't work that way. Okay, so Noach builds the teva. A lot of things to discuss in terms of the levels, in terms of, you know, the window, the tzora, tasa, la teva. And if you turn the page to page 32, so Noach takes, how many years did it take to build the teva? 120 years. Why so long? Because Noach is waiting as he's building the teva, right? And making those constant runs to Home Depot because it's like building a soga. He's always there. They ask him, why are you building the teva? And he answers, what do you mean? Hashem's going to bring a marble. He's going to destroy the world and we have to be better. So there is one very, very important question when it comes to Noach that we'll spend a little bit of time discussing. And that is the question that most Mefarshim struggle with. Is Noach does not seem to daven for anybody else. Right? Noach has this capacity. Noach clearly is a tzaddik. Everybody else is destroyed by Noach's family. And yet, Noach does not ever once really daven for anybody else. So if you look in the Medrash that I shared with you here, the Medrash in Devarim actually, there is a conversation between Moshe and between Noach. So the first answer is, yeah, Noach's wrong. He should have davened for his people. Noach, Amar LeMoshe. Noach says to Moshe, "Ani godel mimcha, I'm greater than you. Shenitzalti midar amabul, I was saved. Ah, the world was destroyed, but I was saved. Amar le Moshe, ani nisal isi yoser mimcha. What do you mean? I am greater than you. Atzaitzalta es atzvecha. You only saved yourself, but I saved the entire generation when they were going to get wiped out by after the eagle. So the first answer in the Medrash is no." Noach really should have davened for other people. He does not, and that is a problem. That is approach number one. There are other answers. For example, the Shem Yishmuel says, for example, that Noach knew he had limited strength. What's Noach really going to do? He's not a great orator. He's not a great speaker. He's not a great inspirer. So he doesn't even try. Rabbi Yosef Shaul Nathanson, the great Sholem Eshev, says no. He thought I don't have the great pedagogical skills. Somebody else who's a better speaker. And what's the proof that Noach is wrong about that? What's the proof? Moshe's not a great speaker. Aaron was the greater speaker. And Moshe saves the Jewish people. So look at Rav Aaron Lichtenstein for a second. Source number two. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein offers an amazing, amazing idea about Noach. That Noach's issue was that Noach was an ish tzaddik. In fact, if you go back, it says he's ish tzaddik tamim haya bedorosav. What does it mean to be tamim? To be tamim. What does it mean to be tamim? To be whole. Meaning what? Right? Noach was very genuine, and he never failed. But sometimes the call of the hour changes, and you have to respond in kind. So when the world was crazy and immoral and disgusting, Noach said, I'm gonna live this way. But sometimes the world calls for something. So listen to what Aaron Lichtenstein says. Let's try to analyze the reasons for Noach's downfall. Prior to the flood, you know what the fancy word for prior to the flood is? Very good. Antediluvian. I only know that because of this parsha class. Okay? Noach lived in an evil, corrupt environment. The entire world was immersed in violence, sexual immorality, and despite this, which was not simple, Noach managed to remain righteous. He was unaffected by what went on around him. He held debates with people of his generation who did not believe the flood would come. He maintained his views throughout. The knowledge that his opinion was unusual and special only amplified his sense of mission and obligation, helping guard him from the pressures of surrounding. So sorry, this is a little bit later. Something very, very fascinating. Noah's issue, according to Rav Aaron here, is, hold on a second. You had the beginning, Noah was an ish. Turn the page, sorry, I did out of order for a second. I'll come back to this in one second. If you go to the next page, to the Kedushas Levi says the following. The Kedushas Levi, the great Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdishev, explains this. He explains, Tamdavar Maduach in Loispala Noach, this comes from Baruch Simon, Sefer the Imre Baruch. Says the Kedushas Levi, Hagamsha Noach Tzadik Godol Vitamim. Right, we know that the Rishonim debate, what does that mean? That Noach was a great Tzadik. Was he a Tzadik only in his generation? Because had he put in another generation, he'd be a nobody, or he'd just be an average guy. Or he was even greater tzaddik. So says the Kedushas Levi. This is the middle of page 2. Noach was a tzaddik gadol v'tam, source for it. He was pure, he was righteous, but he was katav be'enav me'od. He, in his own mind, viewed himself as very little. V'lo haya emuna be'atzmo, she'et tzaddik Moshe v'yachal levat el ha'gezira. And Noah said, I'm a tzaddik, but I'm not a tzaddik to save the world. I'm not a tzaddik that I could do and I could dive in and I could help. It's not going to do anything. He viewed himself as a nobody. So if you view yourself as a nobody, Adarabba, Hayachashav Einav Kishar Hador. He said the following, I'm a nobody. So if I'm going to be saved, then everybody will be saved. And if they're not going to be saved, I'm not going to be saved. If I'm saved in the teva, then for sure everybody else will be saved. I'm not greater than them. So on the one hand, a person should have humility and sensitivity and, you know, not think of themselves as too great and too haughty. But it doesn't mean you should downplay. We sometimes confuse humility with being a loser. Humility means that I know who I am. I know my strengths and I know my weaknesses. Noach viewed himself as a nobody. So Rashi says that Noach was mikatnei emuna. He was of ye of little faith. Meaning as it rained, he didn't get in the teva until eventually he's pushed in. Doesn't mean he didn't believe God would bring the mabul. He built the teva for 120 years. He knew that he would bring the mabul. He didn't deny the powers of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rotza lomar, Noach was katov be'enov be'emuna. He saw himself as a nobody. Who am I to overturn the decree of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And this is something that is extremely, extremely important in our own minds, that we never, never, never downplay the abilities that a single individual Jew's tefillah, mitzvah observance can affect the entire heavens. Where we spoke about on Shabbos Shuva, how when the person who was walking home after the Shalosh Regalim would daven to Hashem that it shouldn't rain. And when the Kohen Gadol, when he comes out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he davens that Hashem shouldn't listen to this guy. Because we want rain. One Yenim walking home to some town in the middle of Israel is enough to make it stop, to not have it rain. It's an amazing thing. We should never downplay what our actions can do, especially something like this. This is a very recurring message you're hearing from everybody around the world. Nobody should feel that my extra tehillim, my extra tefillah, my extra liman haTorah, my extra chesed, my extra beratim lechaveru doesn't do anything. We have the ability to save the world. Kadosh Baruch Hu implants within us an ability to change the heavens. The Rambam says we should view ourselves, we shift the scales. It's part of the issue sometimes that when we glorify, you know, certain tzaddikim, yes, they're role models, they're inspiring, they're great, they help us. But if we believe that they took our place, that they could do it instead of me, that's a problem. I should go to Gedolim to get brachos and to get guidance and hadracha. But to believe that I can also daven, that I can also, the pasuk says that eventually, the mensch says, we make a Kadosh Baruch Hu make a machal at tzaddikim. In the end of times, there will be a circle. Why a circle? Because we have a circle, everybody's equidistant to the middle. And this is what Noach, according to the Kedushas Levi, this was Noach's issue. Noach did not view himself in enough of a positive light. And this helps us understand another thing that happens in the Parsha. So if you skip ahead a little bit in the Parsha, I know I'm going to skip a little bit. But we have the Mabul. The Mabul ends. When exactly the Mabul ends? Where it's a great geographical shear. Where is it? What happens? Where's the Teva? But after everything happens, we know that Noah sends out the bird, sends out the dove, sends out the raven. Eventually, Noah comes out of the Teva. What does Noah do when it comes out of the Teva? So he plants. He has karbanos. And what does he do? What does he do, unfortunately? He gets drunk. Okay, he gets drunk. Why does Noah get drunk? Why does Noah get drunk? So there are a number of approaches to why Noah gets drunk. So here's the psukim. Hold on a second. So if you look for just to speed ahead a little bit, if you go to page 38, so Noah leaves the Teva. Hashem says, okay, go ahead. You know, you should settle the land. You should go out. You should conquer. He builds a mizbeach at the bottom of page 38. Right? The psukim tell us he offers karbanos. This is why he brought the animals in the Teva, to offer the karbanos. Then you have the rainbow, you have the reminder, which we'll talk about in a minute, of Hashem saying this will never ever happen again. If you look at the bottom of page 42, what happens? Noach v'ibnoach yotzim en ateva shem Cham v'yefes v'cham who's Avi Kenan. He has these three children. Umeilo navtza kol aretz pasuk chavalav 21 v'yochol Noach isha adama v'yita karem. He builds this, he plants his vineyard and he drinks. What happens? V'yishmin ayayin v'yishkar v'yiskah b'socha holo. And it's very bad. It's very embarrassing. Why is he drunk? What? It's clearly not the right. It's not what's supposed. He's not supposed to get drunk. So what's the explanation? So Rabbi Lau, actually, in his autobiography, Out of the Depths, he quotes the story that he once visited Yitzchak Manger in a hospital. He's a great Yiddish writer. And he explained to him, he said once that he would drink a lot. And he said that he once gave Rabbi Lau an explanation, and he said, why do I drink? I drink to forget, right? It's so terrible, everything that I experience in my life, and the Shoah, I can't do it. So the easy answer is why Noah drinks is this answer. He walks out of the Teva. The world's mamish gone. And not either what's the responsibility, it's the feeling of helplessness, of, oh my gosh, is this going to happen again? It could very, very, very well be. But however, here's the problem. If that's the case, when would Noah have been drunk? When would Noah have been drunk?
It's got to be years.
Okay, look, so good. Turn to page 38. Go to the middle of 38, the fourth Aliyah. Okay, the fourth Aliyah. If he were just drunk because he was in denial about rebuilding the world, then the moment he got out of the Teva, he sees what's happening, he finds the local binnies, he buys it out, and it's over. That's not what happens. Says the Pasuk. Middle Pasuk, Tezvav 15, Vayidaber Elokim al Noach Lemar. Same in Ateva. Says Hashem, go out. Ata v'ishtecha uvanecha ushnei vanecha itach. Go out with everybody that was in the Teva. Kol achaya ishir techa mikol basar bova babahima. All the animals, v'choremes harumis ala aretz, hotz, take them out. And not only that, Shartsuba aretz uparu varovo al aretz. So clearly he is told to go out and to do what? To start rebuilding the land and the world. Is he drunk yet?
No.
He's not drunk yet. He goes out. What does he do next? Says the Pasuk Chav, Vayivin Noach Mizbeach LaHashem. He builds a Mizbeach. Anytime somebody is building a Mizbeach and Sefer Bereishis, it is a call to God. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, they all do these things. They have a revelation of Hashem. They have a connection with Hashem. Not only that, Chaf Aleph, Vayarach, Es Hashem, Es Reyach, Hanichoach. Those psukim come up many, many times later in Sefer Vayikra, all the time. Whenever a korban is offered, it's a beautiful incense, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So clearly, things seem to be going in the right direction. Noach comes out of the Teva. The world was destroyed because it was immoral and disgusting and terrible and justified. It's destroyed. It's cleansed. That's the Mayim and 40. That's why you have, 40 saw and a mikvah, all those things. The world is cleansed. The world is rebuilt. Now, go to the bottom of page 40. After all of this happens, however much time exactly it is, but after all of this happens, Hashem says the following. Vayomer Elokim El Noach V'Albanav Ito Lemar. Hashem says, I I have a following reminder to you. Va'ani, turn the page. We're going to go back to Rashi in 1 second. Hinani. Mekim es brisi itchem. I will uphold my bris with you. Ve'asarachem achareichem. And with all of your children. Don't worry, this won't happen again. Here's the rainbow. Here's the keshas. You should realize that I will take care of you. Okay. Go to the bottom of page 40 in the Rashi, in the left side. In the left side, the last Rashi in Pasuk, the first Rashi in Pasuk test, last Rashi on this column. Right? There is something in the world, in the study of history called counterfactual history. It's a genre of books you can buy. If the other side won whatever war, if this people, right, there was a Netflix show about this once, right, whatever it was called, something Tower, or like the Nazis, like, I don't know, it was like counterfactual stuff. Okay, you can buy anything. Count, if this team, you know, won the champ, whatever it is. Listen to what Rashi says. Rashi says that Noach is nervous. Noach is nervous. You're telling me to go out of the Teva, have a family, rebuild the world, but... But what? What am I worried about if I'm Noach? It's going to happen again. Well, I'm going to bring another family into this world. It's going to get destroyed and uprooted again. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Maskim aniimcha. I agree with you. Noach doeg la'asok privya verivya. Noach was nervous to start a family. Achivtichu HaKadosh Baruch Hu shel l'shaches ha'olam od. Says Noach, so long as you can promise me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this won't happen again. Hashem says, okay. Amar lo, hinani maskim, I agree. Lasos kiyom v'chizok bris lahavta chasi. And not only that, I'm going to show you this rainbow. That's why in general, right, there's a whole shiloh when you see rainbows. So there's a bracha, you're supposed to say, the idea that everything we do in our lives connects with Hashem. So brachos are that a major example. Everything in my life has a bracha. Rainbows have a bracha. But when you see a rainbow, what do you know? That Hashem wasn't so happy. Ah, he could have destroyed the world, but he didn't. So it's an actual shaila. If you could tell somebody, there's a beautiful rainbow outside. On the one hand, it's a chance for a bracha. On the other hand, I don't always have to tell you that God's not happy with you. So some poskim said, absolutely, you should tell somebody. You should tell somebody that Hashem's not so happy with us. On the other hand, some people felt, maybe not. They'll find their own rainbow, right? So it's a good shayla. We seem to be okay with it. You should say a bracha when you see the rainbow. So Noach is nervous, and he says to God, I need a promise. And God says, okay, here you go. And all of a sudden, Noach realizes, that was it? All I had to do was ask and daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What would have happened if 120 years earlier, when this was happening, I said to Hashem, maybe not. What happens if I said to Hashem, can we try? 2 weeks from now in Parshas Vayera, what's going to happen? What's going to happen with Avram? Hashem invites Avram to that conversation. And Avram says, don't destroy Sodom. There's tzaddikim there. There's good people there. Noach, all of a sudden, is faced with this dilemma. Oh my gosh. Had I thought about this? Had I davened? Had I asked? Had I beseeched God once? Maybe this wouldn't have happened. But it's too late. It's too late. The Zohar says, yeah, it's too late. Now you're asking for Noach? Now you're concerned with your Ben Adam the Chaveru?
He doesn't even get credit for that. The Psukim, Noach
is
silent.
Silent.
He doesn't say a word.
Correct. Now, so what Rav is going to say is, Noach's great, you know, sometimes when you go on interviews and they ask you, what's your greatest strength? So what you're supposed to say. Whatever your greatest strength is also my greatest weakness. Okay? One time I applied to a job somewhere, it was many years before I came to Chicago. It was actually in wherever it was. And they asked me in the interview, what's your greatest strength? So whatever I gave them an answer, I said, that's also my greatest weakness. And they're like, no, we want an actual weakness. Like, what is something you're not good at? Okay? Noach's strength is his weakness. Noach is very insular. So you find there is, psukim are different. Where does Noach walk vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Next to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where does Avram walk?
Before.
Right? Before, in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Noach's great quality is Vayas Noach Kecho Asher Tziva Hashem Kenasa. Whatever God said, Noach did. And that, by the way, that's what it means to be a tzaddik. There are certain rules, right? The mitzvot are not good deeds. Mitzvot are commandments. We have to do them. Noach always did the right thing. Now, Noach should have expanded beyond that. But Noach only stays in that mode. And now, Noach doesn't He doesn't get credit because he shouldn't get credit for it in a certain way. That's how it is pointing out. He stays very much in this model. So now, if you go to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, if you go to Rav Aaron on the first page, this is what Rav Aaron says about Noach post the Mabel. When the entire world was immersed in violence and sexual immorality, Noach was a tzaddik, unaffected by what went on around him. He held open debates, people of his generation. He did not believe the flood would come. He maintained his views. The knowledge that this opinion was unusual and special only amplified his sense of mission and obligation, helping guard him from the pressures of surroundings and helping him distinguish between good and evil. Meaning, before the Mabel, it was very easy to see good and bad. Immorality, corruption, promiscuity, bad. Worshiping God, listening, not being, stealing, good. Okay? Unfortunately, we don't live in always such an easy black and white world. Okay? So now, it's post the Mabel. So now, Noach, there's no Dor HaMabel to say, I'm not going to be like that. It is very easy for us in our lives to find people that are just not where my religious level is. And so long as I can find somebody that's just a little bit beneath me, I can be like, I'm not like him. My Shmona Esrei went an extra 10 seconds. Granted, I waited for him to finish so that I can wait an extra 10 seconds, but I'm firmer than him. My kids do this, and my dad did that, and I learned this, and I learned that. So long as I've lifted myself up by putting somebody else down, it's black and white. But that's not what we're being asked to do. So it says Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. After the flood, the situation was different. Noach was no longer unusual. He was alone. Before him lay the huge task of rehabilitating the world. There was no choice between good and evil. It was between good and another. What would be the best way to resettle the world? Many things had to be, right, required rebuilding. Noah had to organize his priorities. What was first? What could be left for later? Here he had to stand only up for himself, and in this, he failed. Instead of seeing the most elementary and central infrastructure, he planted a vineyard and became drunk. Sometimes we suffer the same problem. We know how to guard ourselves and deal with outside elements that we declare them to be opposed to all that is dear to us. But we are not always successful in grappling with our own nature, our time properly, proper priorities and limits. Noach's downfall should teach us to devote careful attention to this battle too. It's an amazing, amazing idea of Aaron Lichtenstein. I actually see this. I've seen this late in the last number of years, actually, and a little bit actually in students who are in Israel. Sometimes you find certain students when they get to a yeshiva or a seminary, and for a lot of their high school lives, based their religious, wonderful as it was, on everybody else. So there was a certain frumness to them because they weren't, this is not any high school in particular. I've seen it in a range, boys and girls. And then when they go, and because they felt good, they go to a, whatever yeshiva seminary that is. But not everybody in that yeshiva seminary was from because of everybody else. Maybe they were just, they liked those things. And when they find themselves with like-minded individuals, it's very hard. It's very overwhelming. Because my whole essence for the last 2-3 years was what everybody else was doing, I wasn't, as opposed to what I am doing. So in our own lives, we do struggle with this sometimes. We look around and we find people that are not as where I am, as opposed to saying, where else can I go? And now look at Rabbi Yitzhak Tursky. If you've ever seen these beautiful svar by Yitzhak Tursky called the Amita Shel Torah, beautiful set, 2-volume set on Chumash, it's excellent. He says the following. The point that God is only viewed him as being a tzaddik in his generation of the flood, but as tamim throughout his life. This is what he means. The distinction brings together all the points we mentioned above. Noach is consistent throughout his life. Bidorosa, from beginning to end, he was tamim. Noach never did wrong. He was neither corrupt or evil. He always walked alone with God, as described by the Ran. He never changed throughout his many years. While Noach comes not change in absolute terms, his insistence on maintaining his insular, irrespective of his surrounding, is problematic. The fact that Noach was successful in remaining tamim when the world was perverted and corrupted is reflective of his great integrity. Meaning, Noach was saved is pretty impressive. No one else is saved. No one else gets saved because it was a bad world. The animals are corrupted, Rashi says. But turn the page. That Noach maintained his isolationist stance in post-diluvian generation is the problem. When faced with a different challenge, a new contact, and a fresh mandate, Noach does not change at all. An examination of the text reveals that God, subsequent to the flood, relates quite differently to the same issues of mankind. So before the Mabel, great. You were tamim, and that tamim was excellent. Post the Mabel, you should still be tamim. but you need to use that to expand, to move out, to go out of your comfort zone. And this, you know, again, our job is not to knock on Noach. Noach was a tzaddik. You know, sometimes we like get the, only in his generation. The world was corrupted. Everybody got destroyed. But we're supposed to learn from these stories and implications to our own lives. Our lives are never just one straight line. It's always curves. Sometimes we're being asked to do something, and sometimes at the same time. Right now, there are certain things that we should be completely isolated from. We shouldn't have exposure to them, and we shouldn't. There's no involvement in certain things that are in the world today. But at the same time, we should also be out there and connecting and doing things that are beyond our small little bubble. So these are some of the things about Noach. So this explains, number one, why Noach doesn't daven for a generation, either because he didn't feel like he was capable of it, he wasn't the great orator or the great speaker. Maybe Noach was wrong, the Medrash says, or Noach did not view himself in that way. And Noach viewing himself in a very limited way is potentially the reason that this happens to Noach. That when Noach finishes, and by the way, Rabbi Soloveitchik points out that Noach actually goes down in his character. He's an ish tzaddik in the beginning, and at the end he's an ish ha'adama. So he went down. He was downgraded because how his life shifted post the Mabul. And I share with you here, we did a little more outside, but this piece here on page number three by the Stipler talks a little bit about how Noah sort of viewed himself, but we'll leave this out for now. Okay. So now, this takes us, therefore, to the rainbow, which we're up to right now on page number 40, that Hashem tells Noach, I will not destroy the world again. And because I will not destroy the world again, Noach realizes, time to rebuild. Oh my gosh, I could have rebuilt the world potentially without having this to suffer. And therefore, we have the rainbow. Rabbi Rav Hirsch points out that the rainbow, the world changes now. And this actually helps us understand what's going to come at the end of the parasha before we get to one little piece at the bottom here. What happens at the end of the parasha, which is Migdal Bavel. But the rainbow is multicolored. The goal of Noach post the Mabul is a world that had many, many colors to it that was supposed to be unified into its existence, right? We're supposed to work with a lot of different people. But we're not supposed to be just one Jewish people doing one thing. We have many, many varieties of things that we do. You find this...
No longer black and white.
Right? You find this on the Mishkan. The Mishkan had something called the Tachash. The Tachash was a cover of the Mishkan. The Tachash, the Gemara says, was called the Sasgona, a six-colored animal. Its skin was six colors, and the Gemara says it enjoyed all of its colors. Why was that the covering of the Mishkan? Because that's our goal. Our goal, it's something that we're, you know, I've said this in different contexts the last week or so. It is something that we are experiencing right now in unprecedented levels, and that should only continue. This level of Avas Yisrael, level of understanding of that the more that what unites us is really more than what separates us. So that's a little bit about the rainbow. Okay. Now look at the bottom here. Something very, very interesting. And I feel I didn't quote it here from Rabbi Soloveitchik, but I'm going to share with you a beautiful idea. Look at the bottom. So we find this story with Shem, Cham, and Yefes. So let's learn what happens. Bottom of page 42, Pasuk Chav Aleph. Vayesh min hayayin, vayishkar besoch ahalo. So he drinks and he's drunk. Turn the Vayar Cham, Avi Kanan. Cham sees what's happening. He sees Ervas Aviv. The Noach is unclothed. Vayaged l'shnei echav b'chutz. And what does he do? He goes and tells his brothers. Okay, so he doesn't do anything. Vayikach shem v'yefes esasimla. Pay attention to the words here. Vayikach shem v'yefes esasimla. So what do? They take this garment, they cover, v'yasim ashchem shneim, and they actually properly, v'yocha choranis, they walk backwards, showing a sense of kavod. Vayachasus ervas avihem, they cover him up. Ufneim achronas ve'ervas avihem lo ro. So now, if you look at Rashi at the bottom here, okay, if you look at Rashi on the right side, Pasuk Chav Gimel, Rashi picks up on the language of the Torah. Okay, so if you go, you'll see that it says, if you go back to the Pasuk, the top of the page, the language seems to be off. If Shem and Yefes saved Noach, then it shouldn't say Vayikach, it should say Vayikchu. They covered him. So Rashi says the following. Rashi says, Ein ksiv, third line on the right side, Ein ksiv, Ella vayikach. The language is off. It should have said vayikach. Lime vayikchu. Ella vayikach. Lime al shem shenis ameitz mitzvah yoser miyefes. But it doesn't, because it teaches us that actually, who was more involved in the mitzvah? It teaches us that shame was more involved by this. Shenis ameitz b'mitzvah yoser miyefes. And not only that, they each get different rewards. It's fascinating. Zachu banav l'talis shel tzitzis. They are therefore given the mitzvah of tzitzis. V'yeve zachu l'gvura banav. Yefes is given the reward that he gets, sees the barrel of his shoes. So what does this mean? So Rabbi Soloveitchik said the following. Rabbi Soloveitchik said there is a difference between ethics and etiquette. What's the difference between ethics and etiquette? So etiquette is rules for basically not embarrassing myself. Right? Don't embarrass yourself, right? Don't use the fork when you're supposed to use a little fork or the big fork, right? That's etiquette. Ethics, that I'm doing it because it has to be done. So go back to Rashi for a second. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said the following. Shame acted first. Why does shame act first? Because he felt that was the right thing to do. When I was in YU, so every night for dinner, you were offered, you took your tray, you can get whatever the main course was, and then there was an option of French fries or vegetables. Now, how do you know that YU makes excellent French fries? And there was a guy behind the counter, and he would always say, do the right thing. Just do the right thing. And every guy would say, French fries, please. Okay? Because they were excellent. Ethics is doing the right thing. Shame gets credit because he does the right thing. He didn't care. He didn't wait for somebody else to tell him this is the right thing. He's not Cham, who doesn't even do anything. He runs and tells them. And Yefes gets credit, but his credit is not the credit. And therefore, what is the two mitzvahs that they get? So what is Shame's mitzvah? What's Shame's mitzvah? It's the mitzvah of tzitzis. The mitzvah of tzitzis is, right now some people wear their tzitzis out, you can see them, but tzitzis are generally worn underneath your clothing. Who knows that you're wearing them? God knows that you're wearing them. Right? God knows that you're wearing them. Back in the day, we would have tzitzis checks. Right? No longer. That's not necessarily so appropriate. Although I'll tell you, we were cracking down on dress code in school. And they're running over, and now that if they're missing one of the big three, they have straight up detention, lunch detention. And they came running to me and said they're wearing tzitzis. So it's a beautiful thing. Okay? And I didn't ask them for it. They showed it. And if you look at Yefes is blessed actually with beauty, with aesthetics. It's outwardly, it's sort of the norm of the world. Etiquette is important, but ethics is really what should drive us. Okay. Now, This understanding, we'll move on from Shem, Cham, and Yefes for a second. We'll skip ahead as you have all of this genealogy for a little bit and go to Perek Yud Aleph. Go to Perek Yud Aleph, page 48. Page 48. Now, it's very important to understand this bridge. We are moving in Sefer Bereishis to get to the, you know, really to Shemos, where the Jews are formed. But there's a lot of trial and error, so to speak, to get to the right formula. So the Mabel, start over. Then you get this generation, the Dor HaMabul. So Dor HaMabul, the Dor HaFlaga, the generation of the Tower of Babel. So let's learn for a second what they do. Now, they're not wiped out, which is important, but let's read. They are one unified people. If I were ever to tell you such a thing, you would praise them. Dvarim Achadim, Safa Achas, it's beautiful. They all said the same language, they did the whole thing. And what do they do? Vayomram Pasagimel, Ish. Re'ehu havel nil b'na levenim. You notice, by the way, Re'ehu in the Torah doesn't mean friend. Doesn't mean, if you ask somebody who your friends are today, they would tell you the people that they're close with. A Re'ehu really in the Torah is just what?
Counterpart?
Yeah, or not even that. It's somebody that I have some interaction with. The proof is, in Sefer Shemos, the Jews in Parshas Bo are going to the Mitzrim to get their stuff. What are they called? What are the Mitzrim called? Ish, the Re'ehu, Isha Me'es Re'usa. They weren't their friends. So the Medrash actually says there, why are they called friends? Because how did the Mitzrim take care of any of their functions during Choshech? They couldn't eat, they couldn't sleep, they couldn't drink, they couldn't do anything. They were mamish stuck in place. How did they do any of those things?
The Jews.
So that little interaction is enough to call them Re'ehu. It's a very, very, very touchy thing to say today. But okay, either way. So the people said to each other, we're going to make bricks, Nisrafa Lisrafa, we're going to make real bricks, we're going to burn them in fire. What are we going to do? Vayomru, Hava, Nivne, Lanu, Ir. We're going to build a city of Migdal, Verosh, Vashamayim. Its tower will be massive. Venasa, Lanu, Shem, Penavat, Apenei, Cholaritz. So we're going to build this massive tower. And what are we going to do? What are we going to do? So Rashi says, so let's understand what were some of these issues. What do they think they were going to do? So the first thing they thought they were going to do is they were going to say, no more. You, God, we calculated, we figured out when the next Babel is going to come. However many, 1,165 years later, we built this tower, so that when you try to destroy the world, we're going to be there. We're going to stop it from destroying, which is obviously ridiculous. Okay? Or they were fighting against God himself, and they thought the world was going to be destroyed, or whatever. They're there to fight the world again. There's another approach to this. The other approach to this is, the Nitziv here at source 7, I'll just explain this to you outside. The Nitziv says the following. God, after the Mabel, says, here's what I want you to do. Go out into the world, settle it, disperse, paru vayishritzu, go out. And the Jews said, that's not what we're going to do. We're going to stay dvarim achadim. We're going to stay together. Mamish as one people. Oh, it's beautiful. Achdus, achenu, all the time. Not like that. This achdus was safa achas udvarim achadim. You know what that looks like? Same thing, same avodas Hashem, same wardrobe. There's another word for that. You know what it's called? It's called communism. Okay? We'll do the same thing. Then Nitziv says, this tower wasn't a tower to defend the world from falling and shattering. It was a watchtower. They were watching to make sure that you did the same thing, and you did the same thing, and you dove in the same way, and you did the same thing. And Hashem says, that is not what I want. I'm not going to destroy you because you're on the right path. That's not what I want. I want there to be a variety. I want there to be different ways. Already, this is something that is clear in Shemos. It's clear at the end of Bereishis when Yaakov blesses his children and gives them a unique bracha. It's true in Sefer Shemos with the Shvatim, a unique symbol and a flag and a degel and a color. But it's true here. Hashem says, that's not the way. The way is to be different. The difference between unity and uniformity is all doing the same thing. And unity is diversity all working towards the same goal. Hashem says, you try uniformity. That's not what I want. So what's the punishment? The Dora Mabel, that was disgusting and terrible. What does Hashem do as punishment? He cleanses it. What does Hashem do as punishment to this generation? He changes it. He makes them be different and work very, very differently. That's what the Nitziv says. But I'll take it one step further. Say, if you turn to page 5, quote you a piece from my cousin. I tell him every time that I quote him, I should get like 5%, 10%. But has not yet happened. My cousin writes the following. He says, from a cursory reading, it's not clear exactly what was so terrible about this generation. After all, is not achieving achdut a positive goal? Likewise, the use of human ingenuity to initiate a industrial revolution, man-made materials, positive advancement? Right? What's wrong? Why is God so angry? The door of this generation of the Migdal Bavel. Chazal focused their criticism of this generation on the antagonistic attitude towards God. One key phrase of the Torah's explanation of the purpose of the tower reflects their egocentric nature. Na'ase lanu shem. What does that mean? We'll make for us a great name. What do you mean for you a great name? Instead of devoting themselves to the name of God, this generation devotes all their efforts for the sake of an unholy end. Their society and culture focus solely on man's dominion and strength, neglecting divine purpose for their existence. Although their moral behavior was better than the generation of the flood, God remained disappointed. For they established a... Who knows how to pronounce that word? Beautiful. Better than you than me. Man in the center instead of a theocentric one. God at the center. The primary aim... By the way, we're working towards the right goal. Who's the right goal? What's going to be next week's parsha? Is Avraham... And what does Avram do when he makes a mizbeach? Vayikra b'shem Hashem. Same thing, same word, just different end. Lo nu shem versus shem Hashem. What is the goal of the Beis Hamikdash when it's built? The puzzle says in Re'eh, Vayikra b'shem Hashem. So says Menachem Livtek. As God's hope that this new generation would be kora b'shem Hashem never materialized, he instigates their dispersion. God must take action to assure that this misdirected unity will not achieve its stated goal. He causes the mixing of languages so each nation will follow its own direction, unable to unify, till they will find a common goal worthy of that unity. Our analysis thus far can help us understand the identify the thematic significance of Migdal Bavel to next week. Right? That's what we just said. In a manner similar to the story of the Chumash, story of Hashem choosing Avram is introduced not by chance, but by this generation. So we're getting there. We're getting there. And if anything, I think as all the learning we're doing now is connected to what's happening in Eretz Yisrael. And I think it has to be, because our mind has to be on that focus. We are experiencing right now. We'll never know reasons for things, and it's not on us to figure out, and we can never ask such, we could have the questions, we could be confused, but ultimately, that's what Emunah Bitachon is. But what has happened as a response to a variety of Jews that have come together for a common cause. You could be different, you should be different. Somebody once came to me years ago, they had this great plan. Their plan was they were going to knock down all the shuls in Chicago, they were going to make one shul for all the Jews. And I said, I do not agree with such a model. Okay? If I was the rabbi, I would have disagreed, but I wasn't. I don't think he wanted me as the rabbi, so I definitely wasn't going to agree. Now, sometimes we go too far the other direction, but there should be a variety. You should have varieties of nuschaos, varieties of tradition, of minhagim, of nigunim, of misoros. It's great. It's beautiful. It's what makes us different. Now, we can't have this in all ways. For example, when you had the Sanhedrin, so when there was a disagreement in halacha, we have to have one halacha. You can't do one thing and I do one something. You need uniformity in halacha. Otherwise, it's mayhem. Okay? But in how we approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there should be a variety of opinions. What you're seeing now is whoever my identity is and my philosophy and my hashkafa, each one of those sects have their own gadol and their own das Torah. But the fact that it is coming together for the greater purpose of Jews, that's unity. That is achdus. Achdus is, you know, these major Tehillim gatherings of all sects of Judaism, from 15,000 Hasidim in Brooklyn to 8,000 Brachim in Lakewood to 2,500 Jews in Chicago to Houston and Cleveland and Brazil. That's Achdus. The fact that I go to a different school and I do that is what Hashem wants. Hashem wants us to have different philosophies and hashkafos, but all understand that we have one purpose. Okay, and within those hashkafos, there's plenty of things to work on and to fix and to amend, and everybody has their own issues. But this is the segue to next week's parsha, because Avram is chosen again, meaning not against Noach, but everything that happened to Noach, so to speak, finds its tikkun, its fix in next week's parsha. You have, which we'll talk about next week. You have Avram, who is going above and beyond, davening for people and asking and saving without being asked to, right? Not waiting for Hashem to say something to him. Avram, who is looking to bring people into Judaism, when Noach was looking, you know, to have those debates, but didn't know how to rebuild. Noach wasn't the builder. Avram is the builder. Avram finds monotheism, and Avram does all of these things. So all of these pieces, as you go through the parasha on your own, you can see how all of these pieces really lead us to next week. And Vlacha to Vayera, it's a beautiful thing. One of the greatest things we have in Torah is that it's not your first time learning Noach, not your first time learning Bereishis. Every year you open it up, you're like, there's new insights. Somehow there's new svarim and new ideas. It's a tremendous thing. Rav Kook used to say that's the greatest thing, right? When you learn math, so a fifth grader who learns math, when they go to sixth grade, the fifth grade math book is gone, in the garbage. Sixth grade math book, done when they go to seventh grade. Torah, I tell my students all the time, you're learning the same brachos that Rav Shechter learned and the Gedolim learned. It's the same Gemara. It's the same Parsha. New insights, new ideas. So hopefully some of these ideas help us, you know, just enhance our learning this week. And looking forward to next week as well. Again, every Tuesday, 12:30.